You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. We're talking National League East today. Spring training is in full swing. We've actually got some baseball to talk about, and that's exciting. Talking NL East with MLB.com's five National League East beat reporters. We'll be talking Hector Oliveira, Jose Peraza in the second base situation, as well as Mike Minor in the rotation with Mark Bowman as we talk Atlanta Braves. Talking Washington Nationals, Denard Span, Michael Taylor, Yunel Escobar with Bill Ladson. Talking an awful lot of Matt Harvey and a little bit of Zach Wheeler, and talking Mets with Anthony DiComo. Talking Marlins with Joe Fusaro, looking at Matt Latos, at Danny Hechevarria, and the fifth starter competition. And talking Philadelphia Phillies with Todd Zielecki, we'll be looking at Cliff Lee and Chase Utley. Thanks, everybody, for listening to MLB.com Extras. Talking Washington Nationals with MLB.com's Nationals beat reporter, Bill Ladson. Bill, it's been the news hasn't been that great so far health-wise from Nationals camp. The biggest development here lately is Denard Span has undergone additional surgery to repair a muscle injury. I realize it's still kind of early and still developing. What's your understanding of Span's status and how long they're going to be doing without him?
What I understand, he's not going to be ready for the opener. And, you know, that's really too bad. I mean, he's coming off a great season. And I spoke to him yesterday. And he acted like it was going to be a while. He didn't give me, like, a timetable. Neither did Matt Williams. I mean, Matt Williams is hoping that he's ready, but based on what Span told me, that he's not going to be ready for opening day.
Is this to make sure I understand, it seems like this is in some way, if not directly related, somehow a result or somehow at least connected to the operation or the injury he had earlier in the winter. Is that correct? Is there at least some sort of sequence involved there?
I guess. I mean, based on what he told me, after he had the sports hernia surgery, I guess 6 or 7 weeks after that, he started feeling pain. And but he kept saying that he thought it would go away. And then he played his first exhibition game last week, and it grew worse. And, you know, I'm assuming it's related, but that's not what he told me. But I'm just telling you, he was really in pain after that first game, and then he had the surgery in Philadelphia.
Given that, you know, it's sort of, however, what exactly the connection is, that he's sort of been in some way physically compromised and dealing with some issues for a fairly extended period of time now. Is there any degree of worry as to what he'll be able to do when he comes back, that whether he will be somehow compromised or not at full ability for a while, even when he does come back?
I don't think he'll be compromised in any way. As long as he takes his time, not rush into getting back to the game. Now, you know, this year is an important year for him. He's a free agent. So you would hope he would take his time and just make sure that everything is 100%. But knowing Denard Span the way I do, I mean, he's due for a big contract. And I know he would want to get back and prove to everyone that he's going to be a big star when it's all said and done. But, you know, the Nationals have a backup plan just in case he can't make it back, and we'll see what happens.
And you mentioned, you know, the sort of obvious part of that backup plan is Michael Taylor. But, you know, he was going to get some playing time this spring anyway because of Jason Worth's situation.
Correct.
Who's the new beneficiary? If Taylor was already me playing, he moves from the corner to center, I guess. But who sort of moves in and gets extra at-bats now as a result of Span's injury?
It's going to be Tony Gwynn Jr. I mean, it's pretty obvious to me, I mean, the way Matt Williams has been playing Tony Gwynn Jr. lately, that he's going to get most of the playing time. And pretty much Matt Williams told us he was going to get a lot of playing time. So what also helps Tony Gwynn Jr. as well is that Nate McLaughlin is also injured with a shoulder injury as well. So I think I don't know if Nate McLaughlin is going to be ready for opening day, and so far Tony Gwynn Jr. is taking advantage of the situation. So I'm expecting Tony Gwynn, when it's all said and done, to be the backup.
There were already concerns about the Nationals bench, and it's probably overstating it to say concerns about the offense, because it looks like a good lineup. But if there was anything that wasn't up to the level of the rest of the club, you know, the lineup looked maybe good instead of great. If they are going to be dealing without two fairly essential pieces for any extended period of time, and again, I understand these guys are both hopeful to be back sooner than later, but
right,
as they look at contingencies and look at dealing without two pretty essential guys, is there any notion to look outside the organization for a bat, for an outfielder, be it waiver wire, be it trade, anything? Is there any sort of urgency to find another outfielder just to cover themselves in case one of these doesn't go as well or one of these guys is out for a while?
Right now, I have to say no. I think they really have confidence in the people they have on the bench. They have a ton of lefty hitters right now in camp, and they're hoping that some of them will come through, not just Tony Gwynn Jr. They have a guy by the name of Derek Robinson. He's been playing a lot lately. Matt Scholes also in there. So they're hoping that what they have right now will work. Now, if not, then it would not surprise me if the Nationals sign like a minor league guy or something off the waivers, as you said. And I don't see the Nationals settling in for what they have if it's not productive. That's for sure.
What have you seen so far from Michael Taylor? I know he's a guy you've sort of been on for a while. You've kind of touted him for a while. This spring so far, what have you seen from him performance-wise?
Well, Michael Taylor got off to a slow start, too, because he had a neck issue. But he came back over the weekend, and he's been hitting the ball great. Believe it or not, he's been swinging at the first pitch, and so far so good he's been hitting the ball. But my main concern about him, he's got to cut down the strikeouts. He knows that. Everyone knows that. He had 144 strikeouts in the minor leagues last year. That's the minor leagues. So hopefully he'll find a way to cut that down. He's a great defender. That's not going to be a problem in center field. So he's going to provide power that Denard Span can't provide. So that'll be a new take on that offense. So I'm hoping he cuts down on the strikeouts.
Looking elsewhere in that outfield corner bat mix, it couldn't be any earlier, and it couldn't be any more overly optimistic to look at numbers from two or three games. I fully understand we're talking about 11 at-bats here. With that said, in 11 at-bats, Tyler Moore has done some nice things so far, and he's a guy who two, 3 years ago was a really nice player and a pretty key part of that bench who kind of vanished the last couple years. They need bench help. He's a guy who's been good in the past. He's a guy who's got some pop. Is there any opportunity for Tyler Moore to play himself sort of back into the good graces here?
Yes, he has to continue to hit, Matthew. If he doesn't, then, they have no choice, I think, but to designate him for assignment or trade him before the deadline. So, he's out of minor league options. I want to say this to you. Tyler Moore is not a minor league player. He's a major league player. He just needs to play every day. I think he's proven the last 2 years that he really can't come off the bench. I mean, he has to get consistent at-bats. And I think he is better off going somewhere else. I think Mike Rizzo realizes that, too. And hopefully things will go Tyler Moore's way. He's a great guy, and you hope nothing but the best for him.
While we're making too much of very small sample sizes, looked like things went pretty well for Gio Gonzalez in his first start. What did you see from him?
He threw 19 pitches, fastball, curveball was working well. I think the key with Gio is to stay healthy. I mean, last year he had the shoulder injury that he was out for a month because of that. I think he's definitely going to be the fifth starter. So you hope that things will be better this year than it was last.
What exactly is going on with Yunel Escobar? He's dealing with some physical issues, but nobody seems terribly worried about it?
No, they're not worried about it. They think that he'll be okay within the next week or so. He has an oblique issue, But he's, you know, he blames it on playing a new position, you know, making turns and whatnot. I guess this is expected. So by the time he gets back, there's no question he'll be there by opening day. I mean, we saw him walking around yesterday. He's okay.
How big of an issue is it when a guy who's trying to get comfortable in a new position misses these days in spring, which theoretically are really when you're going to get those reps and really get all those drills and get comfortable at the position?
Well, yeah, it's the key there, Matthew, is getting comfortable. You want him to get comfortable with Ian Desmond and whoever else is playing shortstop. And, you know, he really, really has worked hard to improve at the position. You know, as you know, he originally didn't want to play second base. But since he's been in spring training, he asked for extra work. And I think the key with him is you want to get used to playing with Ryan Zimmerman and also playing with Ian Desmond. As long as he can get used to playing with those two guys, he should be okay.
All right. Well, Bill Ladson, thanks for taking some time to chat here on MLB.com Extras. Talking Atlanta Braves with MLB.com's Braves beat reporter Mark Bowman. Mark, as we speak, it seems like there may be or may not be some breaking news with the Braves. As we talk here, what's your understanding of where things stand with the Braves and Hector Olivera?
Olivera's been a player that they've had kept tabs on throughout the offseason. They get a look at him in December, and then sent Freddy Gonzalez down there in early February. Olivera is a guy who would fit an immediate need for the Braves at second base, possibly play some third base. If you're looking into the long-term plans for him with Peraza on the way up and maybe Real Ruiz getting to Atlanta within a year or so, that then maybe he would fit in left field. You know, they definitely have a need there. Now, you know, the expectation is that the Dodgers and maybe at least one other team would are going to be willing to trump where the Braves are willing to go, which I believe is somewhere in between $30 to $40 million. You know, you see the reports that the teams, you feel like it's agent fueled reports that the price tag could be up around $70 million. I don't think there are too many people within the industry that feel that he will go for that or cost that much. You know, the question is, are they going to be a team, will the Dodgers or another club be willing to go up there around that $50 million mark, where I don't think the Braves are willing to go?
Do they view him as a real impact player, potential all-star kind of player, or is he viewed more as a solid regular type? I mean, I realize that to some extent it's all guessing, but what's the read on the kind of upside that this player has?
You know, I think it's probably just a good, solid player. I don't think it's an all-star player. Like you said, it's hard enough to get a read on these guys when you've seen them in international competition. Here's a guy who he battled the blood disorder there recently that kept him out of here. The scouts have not seen him in international competition for a few years. They're getting their look at him here, and he's tryouts that the agent is setting up, and that with the agent setting them up, he's seeing pitchers that probably are, you know, I guess equivalent to A-ball pitchers. I saw, you know, Fangraphs did a nice, you know, diagnosis or evaluation of him, in which they said that there was a pitcher that was coming in that was going to be throwing 94, 96, and he was. Didn't continue to play in that game. And that's just the way, that's the tough part about evaluating a guy like this. You're not seeing him at that level of competition that you're going to be paying him to perform at. So, yeah, it is somewhat of a guessing game, but from what I can gather, the Braves seem more as just a good player to have in your system. I don't know that they see him as that all-star type of guy, like a, you know, certainly not the to that level of Yasmani Tomas or Moncada.
And, of course, he's the second baseman. You mentioned that is a little bit of a complication, though there are places you can go left on the defensive spectrum. But it kind of leads into another topic that came up this week, which is, unsurprisingly, it seems that it is more or less official now that Jose Peraza won't be making the team out of spring training. What has he shown him, and has his timetable changed at all over the early part of this spring?
You know what, I don't think anyone is surprised to know that, you know, there's very little likelihood that he begins the season in Atlanta. I think what has changed, surprisingly, is we're not seeing as much of him here in spring training as we expected. You know, when Freddie Gonzalez said during the winter meetings, you know, and as recently as January, that, hey, look, Peraza's going to play all the time, maybe he didn't account for all the other guys that he needs to get looks at with the Kiosko, Phil Gosselin, and Jace Peterson, how difficult it would be to get all these guys playing time. I mentioned those three guys as the guys that are most likely to begin the year seeing time at second base and also play Peraza. You know, maybe a little bit that they wanted to kind of the front office maybe kind of killing the hype, saying, hey, look, let's not play him a lot real early. But I do expect to see him in camp until the end. You know, maybe we'll see a little bit more of him when some other players are sent down. You know, has he made a good first impression? Yeah, I mean, I don't think you're going to see anything in the game that's going to stand out here, you know, statistically, nor should it. You know, I don't think you should put a lot of weight in it. But the coaches continue to rave about his abilities, you know, as defensively there at second base. We all know what he can do with his legs. You know, it's a guy's a potential difference maker that I do think you're going to see him in Atlanta. As long as he goes to Gwinnett and has some success, I think you can see him in Atlanta sometime in June.
The other thing that's been unfortunately been the sort of biggest news out of Braves camp though here lately. There's some question as to what's going on with Mike Minor. Where is he? How severe an issue is he dealing with? What's the kind of read on something that doesn't seem entirely clear from where I sit?
Yeah, well, you know, I think that there's a lot of people within the organization kind of wondering the same thing. You know, we'll just kind of he went to see Dr. Andrews on Monday and to check out the same shoulder that's been bothering him throughout last year. We're waiting to hear what Andrews' prognosis was or diagnosis, any kind of information that he's given Minor. We probably should be getting that here within the next hour or two. You know, the concerning thing is this. He battled his left shoulder discomfort all of last year. He goes into the offseason. He basically took three full months off. Doesn't throw for three full months. Starts throwing in January. We did a story saying, hey, I feel good. Well, look, you know, there's a lot of guys that are going to feel good 2 weeks in. He continues to throw bullpen. You know, and that was the encouraging thing through the early weeks of camp, saying, oh, look, Mike Minor, it looks like himself, you know, looks like the guy that he was in 2013. But in the back of everyone's mind, you had to remember that once you started getting into live bullpen, throwing a little bit more frequently, maybe getting the adrenaline flowing, this was the concern throughout the winter that this would come back. And, you know, let's say that Dr. Andrews does not find anything structurally wrong with the shoulder. Well, there's obviously something wrong there. It's going to require more than a few months of rest because he's already had this rest and the shoulder has flared up. And Mike Minor has continued to say, hey, look, I don't want to relive what I experienced last year. And then he says, but I'm not concerned. Well, you've got to be concerned because you only threw two live batting practices before this shoulder became a problem again after getting, you know, much more rest during the winter than what would be termed than the kind of rest you would get with what would be termed a minor injury right here in camp.
If they are going to be doing without him for any extended period of time, what does that do to the rotation? Does that lock somebody in, or does it just become a wide open race for two spots instead of one? Or what does that do as they deal without him, whether it's for a couple of weeks or a couple of months or whatever it is? What does it do to how the rotation sets up?
Well, it does. It creates two spots. The Braves came into camp with open to Eric Stoltz, Wandy Rodriguez, Mike Foltynewicz, and Manny Banuelos vying for that one open spot. Now you've got those four guys competing, and you've got another candidate that's kind of that's emerged because now he's going to have a chance to pitch a little more frequently. He's already on the 40-man roster, and Cody Martin. He's not on the 40-man roster. But, I mean, a guy that's right here it's in camp that they've had some experience at the AAA level the last few years. Maybe he's the underdog. Maybe he's the long shot. But, you know, you look at all the candidates. I think Stoltz is probably the safest bet right now. Wandy Rodriguez's recent history, he's made 18 starts the last 2 years. He really wasn't all that impressive. His first outing yesterday, he was a little bit better. I think there's reason to doubt whether he can maybe make it to the finish line. And even if he gets through April, how long is he going to be effective? Mike Foltynewicz, that's now considered the team's top pitching prospect. As you watch him pitch, you ask some of the Braves officials about him. Oh, yeah, I really like his arm. Well, as you know, Matthew, I mean, you know, when they say I really like his arm, they're not saying, hey, look, he's definitely ready. They're saying, hey, look, he's got a lot of potential. Maybe he needs more time. And I kind of think that's where they're leaning with him. With Banuelos, here's a guy that the Yankees bring him back from Tommy John surgery last year. He totaled 76 innings. He was, I think he pitched five innings maybe three times. I mean, it never threw more than 85 pitches in the game. So the Braves are thinking, hey, look, maybe we'll start him slow, put him either in a bullpen here in Atlanta, or put him in a place there in Gwinnett's rotation where, you know, he's on a similar schedule where he's working up. They just want to get him to a point where if he's going to be limited to 120 to 130 innings this year, then he's going to be ending the season as a starter and pitching the regular five to six innings, whatever you expect in that role. So I see him as a long shot as well. So that's what brings you back to Cody Martin. If he continues to pitch effectively, maybe he makes the most sense to put in that final rotation spot.
One last thing, because we're already pushing on time, but if this team is going to surprise people outside of Atlanta or people outside the walls of their own complex and contend, it seems pretty obvious it's going to have to be on the strength of the rotation. I mean, it seems like that's the one thing that really looked like it was going to be set and kind of thing to hang their hat on. Given that, if they are going to be dealing without Minor for an extended period of time, is there any chance that they look externally somehow to add a starter, or is that just not the kind of thing that's viable?
You know, when we heard about Minor, the early indication was, no, we're not going to be looking. We've got enough arms at camp. Maybe something develops. You don't know exactly. They certainly didn't know that they were going to get what they did from Aaron Harang last year. But if there is somebody like that, somebody with an opt-out clause that catches one of their scout's eyes, and they say, look, you know, he would be a better option than, let's just say, Martin or Foltynewicz. So we'll put them as the two guys that could get that spot. You know, if they say, look, it makes more sense to put this guy in the rotation, yeah, I could see that. I do not see them making some significant trade, taking from their farm system right now just to make that move. But, it's like you said. I mean, you go throughout the winter, you look at the reality, hey, look, this team's going to struggle to score runs. It's going to be a battle to get to a 500 record, but maybe the rotation be solid. And when the Minor news came out last week, my feeling was, hey, look, that's going to do the trick. I don't really, it's with the assumption that he's going to miss at least a few weeks and probably closer to a month. I'm thinking this, that's going to be something that's going to be tough to overcome for sure.
All right. Well, Mark Bowman, thanks for taking some time to chat here on MLB.com Extras. Talking New York Harveys, Mets, with MLB.com's Mets beat reporter Anthony DiComo. I watched it. You watched it. Everybody watched it. That Matt Harvey start, I know it was March. I know it was two innings. I know it was Port St. Lucie and not Queens. But that was awfully impressive. What did people in the organization, people who are paid not to freak out and go all fanboy, what did they think about what they saw from Harvey in that first start?
Oh, it blew everyone away. It blew me away. It blew the Mets away. as much as everyone leading up to it talked about how this guy is going to have to rein himself in and he's going to have to maybe put some of that adrenaline aside, I really thought he would. And not that he didn't, but then all of a sudden he's going out and he's throwing 99, and he just looks awesome. And not that it was the 1927 Yankees he was facing. It was a Tigers lineup that came from halfway across the state and didn't really bring all their A-plus guys. But still, I mean, these are major league ball players for the most part, and he blew them away. It wasn't even a fair fight. He was spotting his fastball to both sides of the plate. He had a curveball that really, looked maybe better than what it did a couple of years ago, because that wasn't necessarily his go-to off-speed pitch back then, and it has been now. Everyone was just really, really impressed, and it was two innings, and he's got a long way to go before we see it in a game that matters. And now it's just a matter of, can he maintain this deep into games? Was this just the first start adrenaline thing, or is this really who he is? Because he looked a heck of a lot like Matt Harvey 2013, and that's an awfully good sign for the Mets.
Is there, on the flip side, any concern about the sort of the stuff you talked about? Just they do need him to some degree to be smart. I mean, there's a school of thought, and I think it's true, that you can't ask a guy to go 80%, because to some extent that's how guys get hurt, is by trying not to do what they normally do. But is there some conversation that's still going to have to be had about, look, this is still spring training. We know you're excited. We're excited too. But don't blow it all out in March.
Well, I think the best answer to that came from his pitching coach, Dan Worthen, who said if it was 99 and his mechanics were all over the place and, it just wasn't comfortable with what I saw, yeah, I'd have a big problem with it, but it wasn't. He said he was in control of himself. His mechanics, were smooth. They were as good as they can possibly be, or at least as you can hope they can be. And that's coming from someone who's got a lot of years in the game and who knows a lot more about pitching mechanics than you or I. So I'm taking his word at that one. He didn't look like he was all over the place. You talked to him after the game, Harvey, that is, and, he seemed very much in control of himself. So he does get it. And he very much wants to still be pitching here in September and, if everything goes right for the Mets in October. So I think he's a smart enough guy to realize that. Now, emotion does come over and adrenaline does take over when you're on the mound. And maybe there is a point in the regular season where he's pitching a good game or he's in a tough spot and he breaks from that a little. I think that's a legitimate concern. It's something Terry Collins is worried about. It's something Dan Worthen is worried about, and certainly everyone in the front office. But as far as doing it now in spring training, I don't think that's really where he was at his last outing, and I don't think that's a legitimate worry. I think he's too smart of a guy really to fall victim to that now.
So he's just a freak.
I mean, really, we all saw what he did 2 years ago. So, and I don't want to sound like some sort of jumping on the Harvey fanboy bandwagon myself, but I mean, what I saw was frankly better than what I expected to see. I thought he was going to come out and maybe throw 95. And have some command issues. And that's the big thing that we're not talking about. This command is right where it needs to be. And I know you and I have talked about it many times on this podcast that tends to be the last thing to come to these Tommy John guys. The Mets were hoping they could avoid that by having him rest an extra 6 months this winter. And it's just two innings again, but the command was there. And that's huge for him. If it continues to be there, that could be the difference between him being Matt Harvey and him being 80% of Matt Harvey.
You mentioned the curveball, and it has been something that sort of had some conversation about it. It's not actually a new pitch, is it? It's just something that he's more comfortable. Is it any different than the one he threw before, or is it just a matter of that's kind of what he's comfortable throwing now relative to the slider?
Yeah, it's the latter. It's not a new pitch. It's not a refined pitch. It's what he's had all along. The difference was, back in 2013, the slider was his go-to. That was his out pitch. That was what he went to. And not that he didn't throw the curveball. He threw it a decent amount compared to the slider. But now all of a sudden, you're looking at a guy who's coming off the surgery, and he sees the curve as the most comfortable pitch for him. It's the one that came easiest to him, and so he's throwing it more now in relation to the slider than he did 2 years ago. That could change as he gets more comfortable with his mechanics and with everything coming off surgery. But for now, it's what he's looking at. And, you know, the Mets are all for it because slider places more torque on your shoulder than anything else. And that's obviously something they're trying to avoid with a guy coming off surgery. So, you know, if the curveball is working and it's getting swings and misses like it did the other day, we might see that, you know, all of a sudden become his primary secondary pitch as opposed to the slider. And he might go back, but it's definitely something to keep an eye on.
Meanwhile, the other guy who's supposed to be the sort of co-monster, the head of the two-headed monster there, Zach Wheeler, his comments I thought were interesting. He didn't seem overly worried about one rough outing, nor should he be, but what did you see from Wheeler in his first start?
You know, I saw a guy with really, really good stuff who had trouble harnessing it. And, you know, for a guy like that, that's going to be the big thing for him this year. You saw him in the first inning of his first start, and he looked awesome. He looked, you know, right in that Matt Harvey class. And then the second inning, he just lost it. He hit two batters. He walked two batters, and he didn't even resemble it. And the stuff was still there. The stuff is off the charts. He's probably top 10 in baseball when it comes to that. It's a matter of harnessing it. And that's been the problem with him throughout his young career. You know, command comes and goes for him. He gets in these ruts where he walks guys. Maybe he'll hit a batter. And, you know, all of a sudden the bases are clogged up and it's just one ill-timed hit that gets him. I've said this before. I think his development might be the most critical aspect for the Mets this year because he has all the talent. Like I said, his stuff might be top 10 in the league. And if he can put it together, he still very much has that ace frontline potential. He also has the potential, if he can't put it together, where he could just go along here as a middle-of-the-rotation guy. You never quite know what you're going to get from him. So, you know, his continued development, and he's a smart guy. He's very knowledgeable about his own mechanics. You know, he knows sort of what he needs to do to correct things. He can spot flaws on his own. He doesn't need to wait to look for the video. So if he can sort of put all that together and now coming into his own in his mid-20s and develop into, you know, even a number two type starter, it makes the Mets a whole lot better.
Is Wheeler held to unfair standards because of Matt Harvey?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's unfair, but I think it's definitely a reasonable argument to make. And you know, people have been saying it since the day he came up. So, you know, you remember he debuted on that doubleheader in Atlanta, and Harvey pitched half of it and Wheeler pitched half of it, and all the talk, rightfully so, was this guy who, you know, coming up as a prospect was a better prospect than Harvey was. You know, I think most scouts thought Harvey would be sort of that middle of the rotation 2-3 type guy and saw Wheeler as the frontline guy. So all of a sudden, you know, he comes up following the same plan, actually makes the majors quicker, relatively speaking, than Harvey did. And you're looking at it and you're saying, boy, this is going to be Matt Harvey all over again. It's going to be awesome. And it hasn't quite worked out that way for Wheeler. His learning curve has been slower. And again, I can't stress it enough. I really think this is the year where we're going to know. I think, you know, he's in for a full 200 inning load. And by the end of this year, we'll know if he's going to follow Matt Harvey in that development path and really become a number one type guy, or if he's just sort of going to play out his career and be a middle of the rotation guy. I think, you know, if he's still in this rut that he's kind of has been in at the end of this year, I think we'll probably have a pretty reasonable read that that's who he is at that point. Whereas if he makes significant strides, like we saw from him in the second half last year when he had something like a 2.79 ERA over his final 16 starts, if he can continue on that, then all of a sudden you're looking at one of the better pitchers in baseball.
To turn 180 degrees here, what exactly is the situation with Lucas Duda? He is dealing with some kind of issue. It doesn't seem like anybody's too worried. What's the status there?
Yeah, the only reason people aren't worried is because it happened so early. It actually happened before camp began. He strained the intercostal muscle on his left side, one of those nagging, oblique-type things that take forever to heal, and it really has for him. It's been probably it's going to be going on 4 weeks by the time he gets in a game, which should come soon, should come this week, actually. And, you know, so it's taken a while, and he's going to be a bit behind, but he's taking batting practice now. He's taking his swings, and again, because it happened so early, no one's quite worried about it. But his first time out taking batting practice, he took 40 swings. There were the requisite oohs and ahs. I think he parked one over in a bullpen area behind, way well beyond the field. So it seems like he's back to being Lucas Duda, who even before he broke out, in games and games that matter, he always put on shows and batting practice and that sort of thing. So as long as there's no recurrence, as long as he's careful with it, the Mets are careful with it, he should have plenty of time to be there, to be batting cleanup on opening day.
All right. Well, Anthony DiGomo, thanks for taking some time to chat here on MLB.com Extras. Talking Miami Marlins with MLB.com's Marlins beat reporter, Joe Fusaro. Joe, the Matt Latos situation, it seems kind of odd from the outside. He was fine. He was going to start, and then at the last minute, he didn't start, but everybody still said he's fine, and he pitched in a sim game. What's the situation with Latos?
Yeah, he's lined up now to pitch his first Grapefruit League game on Friday. So that's the good news. I think they probably would have avoided some confusion if they would have said we're easing him into the start of spring training instead of just saying from day one that there were no limitations and he would be up to full speed. So he had that little stem cell procedure in his elbow that he had in mid-October. That kind of delayed his off-season a week or two, and I think we're kind of getting caught up there. Be something, obviously, to watch, to make sure that this guy is at full speed and ready to go when the season starts. All indications are he is fine physically, and, it's a matter of just making sure everything is in the right working order and he gets the necessary innings and hits the ground running when the season starts.
Is there any reason to think that he will be if not compromised, and at least limited in any way at the beginning of the regular season?
Again, Matthew, we have to see how he looks when he's out there. But he threw two innings in the sim game, which is basically, yes, it would have been like the fifth starter spot. That's where they would be now. The starters would be going 3 or 45 pitches. So, it's going to be really curious to see how he deals with pitching out of the stretch, whether he has command of everything, and, if those necessary amount of bullpens and all the stuff that keeps them sharp gets them going. It's certainly something to watch. That's the key guy for them. The reason why they got Herron and Latos was to bring that veteran presence and two guys to eat up a lot of innings to let younger guys not have to move faster. And we'll see whether or not that accelerates the progress of some young guys if either or neither are, ready to go.
Adeniyi Hechavarria has also been dealing with something that sounds like an infielder's version of dead arm. That also seems to be a situation where nobody's terribly concerned. How's he doing?
He hit in that sim game that Latos pitched in. He was possibly going to start today, but he's not. They're giving him another day, which, when you hear a manager saying 50-50, he could start the next day, it usually means 50 on the not-going side, especially this early in camp. They want to see him throw, and the hope is tomorrow. So, if you miss a week of games, no big deal. You start missing 10, 15 games, it starts becoming a big deal. You tend to see that guys who, no matter who you are, if you miss time in spring training, it eventually leads to either a slow start or you're not completely right. So curious, because this is a guy that they're really hoping to be, the real anchor in that infield at short, and offensively he's done a lot supposedly in offseason to really improve that phase of his game, and we want to see how that progresses in camp. No one seems really concerned, and it is one of those things, if it was season he'd be playing. But he had dealt with a left shoulder issue the last couple of years as well. And now his throwing arm, again, a little tired arm, they're calling it. And we'll see if it's any more than that. I mean, he played. The only game he played back was the first game against the Cardinals. And the only ground ball he got, he threw high and wide for a throwing error. So, getting him in working order in game speed is going to be very important.
You mentioned his bat. Do you think there's reason to think that there might be a little more that could be hoped for from him offensively?
Yeah, I mean, if he kind of stays with that approach, that, the middle away approach, he seems to be most successful. What's really going to hurt him, though, is hitting eighth. You know, if he hits eighth, you know, it's going to be hard to get that kind of growth as a hitter, which could lead to something curious, whether Mike Redmond decides to do this during the season, is if Saul Plamacki is struggling, flip those two. Instead of having Etch hit eighth and Salty seventh, that might be an option, but, you know, we're kind of managing a little bit ahead. But I think you, from a fantasy standpoint and a production standpoint, that's something to watch to see if he kind of does a little flip-flop at the bottom of the order to try to give Etcheverry a little bit more of an opportunity to use his athleticism, his speed, and be a little bit more dynamic player offensively by not having always to hit with the pitcher behind him.
Have you seen anything of note, good or bad, or in any way out of the ordinary from Giancarlo Stanton in his first few at-bats of the Grapefruit League season?
I think we're looking at a guy that's on the verge, Matthew, of being the MVP. I think this guy is really locked in. I just think he's rusty. I just think the timing's off. I don't think mentally he's messed up. I think physically he's fine. I don't even think he really needs that face mask other than to protect, you know, dental work that was done not too long ago and make sure all bones are healed. But, you know, all indications are he's, you know, his pitch recognition on breaking balls is getting really good. And he had a real aggressive first swing the other day, hit a long fly ball, wind kind of kept a ball in the ballpark type of thing. I think, you know, he's moving around well. The legs look really good. Not that that was an issue, but, you know, this is a big body guy, obviously. And the focus is there, you know. So I'm pretty excited. If you're a Giancarlo Stanton fan, I've kind of seen the reasons why we should be excited and not, you know, the other side, that the fear factor of, you know, how would he react. I think something special is about to happen here.
I know you're somebody who talks to a good number of scouts and sort of is curious to hear what they say. Does he look like you, to the scouts, does he look like they wouldn't know any difference if they didn't know something had happened?
Yeah, and it is a little early. And you know, a little hat tip to Yadi Molina in game one when, you know, the first thing he's doing is facing Carlos Martinez, who's throwing 98, you know, and he just set everything up away. You know, so, you know, you're not going to look great, you know, when you haven't seen live pitching and then you're seeing 95 plus, you know, so you're not going to look really good there. But, you know, the indications are, yeah, that you're looking at a guy who's an MVP type of guy. And, you know, you get Scherzer today and Harvey tomorrow if he does play tomorrow. So, you know, those are going to be two pretty good showdown and tests right away.
Welcome to the NL East. Granting that everything is with a grain of salt because 3 or 4 weeks of spring training doesn't tell you a lot, never mind 1 week, is anything starting to shake down at all with that fifth starter battle? Is there any clarity or anything developing with that race?
No, if anything, there might be more confusion. You know, Kohler started the first time, and now he's piggybacking. And I think there's some things, and Matthew, you know, with this, there with guys out of options, with just worrisome about a guy who may not hold up. I think that's really going to keep Brad Hand in this mix. You know, here's a guy I thought would, you know, be a very strong trade candidate. Now I think he might be staying because there might be some reservations either about a Latos's health or you know, the effect, you know, how effective certain other guys might be. So I think you might even be looking at a situation where they're breaking camp for 13 pitcher, you know, with 8 relievers just to carry, you know, obviously either Kohler, Hand, or, you know, would be going down to the minors. The Kohler, I guess, could. Hand's out of option, so he can't. But I think there are scenarios that they're both on this team. I think that's kind of a vibe I'm getting as of right now.
Somewhere Earl Weaver just shed a single tear at the thought of a team carrying 13 pitchers. But
yeah, it will be interesting. It will be an upset, but that is a possibility.
A guy you mentioned some over the winter as maybe a potential starting candidate, I just think is an interesting pitcher, whether he's starting or relieving. What have you seen from Aaron Crow? Because this is a guy who was a pretty doggone reliever not that long ago.
Yeah, he's. They did talk a little bit about stretching him out to start, but it seems now it's the more resigned that he's going to lock in and be, you know, be one of those late inning type guys. And so far, so good. I mean, you know, good arm, you know, like anything, get that command going. But certainly someone I expect to be in that mix, sixth, seventh, eighth inning mix once everything gets rolling around.
So is he a guy that, maybe they've kind of got to find here, a guy who, you know, seemed like almost a scrap heap pickup? Is there a potential that maybe he's a little more than that for them?
Who, Crow?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, they kind of targeted him early. I mean, that was a trade made the day after Thanksgiving, you know. So they, you know, they saw a guy they think has a chance to be, you know, a real impact guy, much like, you know, Brian Morris was last year when they got him from Pittsburgh. You know, just another good arm. A guy that's real interesting is someone we talked about a while back was Nick Mattis. You know, here's a guy who's coming off those injuries. He's a non-roster guy, but so far he's been very intriguing. He seems healthy. And if he can stay healthy, you know, he's going to make that competition even stronger as well.
All right. Well, Joe Fusaro, thanks for taking some time to chat here on MLB.com Extras. Talking Philadelphia Phillies with MLB.com's Phillies beat reporter, Todd Zielecki. Todd, a team that really kind of needed everything to go right has apparently already had something potentially very big go wrong. I know it's still very early, but what's your understanding of the prognosis for Cliff Lee right now?
Yeah, at first glance, it certainly does not sound good. He pitched Thursday. He made his first Grapefruit League start Thursday in Kissimmee against the Astros. He seemed to do pretty well. Afterwards, he said he felt normal. He seemed pretty encouraged. And then the next day, he was doing some regular kind of workout type of stuff and felt something in the elbow. And that is certainly alarming because he said it feels the same as it did last year when the elbow injury first kind of crept up. And that elbow injury obviously ended his season in July. So he goes in, you know, he rests, he rehabs, he starts throwing in November. He said when he started throwing in November, he felt something in his elbow, not painful, but just something. It finally kind of went away, and now it's back again. So who knows? Maybe he'll get some good news this week. Maybe he'll throw, and maybe it'll go away. But certainly the fact that he took all of this time off, all this time rehabbing, doing everything he could to kind of strengthen his elbow and make sure it was going well, and now it's kind of back is alarming at least, and certainly for the Phillies who are hoping he would get healthy and then be able to trade him at some point for some young talent, it could potentially be a major blow for him.
When do you think he will know, the club will know, and therefore we will know whether this is just something that popped up after his first time really throwing in anger or whether it's something to really be more concerned about?
You know, I expect to have an update. You know, I think there will be an update at some point this week. So we should get some sort of clarity on it. You know, he's gotten an MRI. You know, he's consulting with different doctors. James Andrews, of course, the famous, highly regarded orthopedist. David Altchek, who's the Mets' doctor, you know, Michael Fakai, the Phillies' doctor. So he's got three different doctors looking at this right now to kind of see what they think is going on. And you know, Cliff kind of acknowledged when we talked to him this week, you know, they said if I need surgery, it could take 6 to 8 months to recover. And if that happens, he's like, my career, for all intents and purposes, could be over. But I think that they're hoping, you know, obviously they're hoping for good news, but I think we should get some clarity on it hopefully soon.
I was struck by that. I mean, obviously a guy with that kind of ability when he's talking about the end potentially being in sight, but I was wondering, and he may not have made it clear, but do you get the impression that he's at a point where he just wouldn't be willing to go through all the misery of rehab again, or was that just him saying, look, realistically, I'm old enough and far enough that surgery, I might not make it back? Is he saying that, or is he saying, look, I just don't think I want to go through rehab again?
Yeah, I think it's the latter. I think he just does not want to go through rehab again. And the only reason I say that is just based off of things that he has said in the past. I remember a couple years ago, he made his final start of the season in Atlanta, and the Phillies, again, were coming off a disappointing season. And he said, hey, I hope we can turn this thing around. I want to go somewhere to win. If not, because I expect this to be my final contract. I don't see myself pitching beyond 2016 because he has a club option for next year. So he said at that time, as a healthy pitcher, he didn't really see himself going on. I know players always talk about that stuff, and then that the money's right or the mood changes. They end up pitching beyond that, but he certainly has given off vibes in the past that once his contract is over, he didn't really want to pitch again, and this certainly could kind of expedite that thinking.
If they are doing without Cliff Lee, just sort of practically in the short term, what does that mean to the Phillies' rotation? What does it mean to, say, a Chad Billingsley? What does it mean to Miguel Alfredo Gonzalez? Where does it leave them if they are doing without a guy who ideally was going to be the number two starter?
Well, yeah, all those guys now become so much more important. Even a guy like Aaron Harang, who missed his first Grapefruit League start last week, is a little bit of back tightness. His health becomes even more important. He pitched this week and felt pretty good coming out of it against the Orioles, so that's encouraging news. But for a guy, those guys were kind of on the periphery, competing with David Buchanan to be the number five starter, even though I think if you talk to most people at the Phillies, David Buchanan was a close lock. So now David Buchanan kind of bumps up to that number four spot if Cliff can't pitch. And now that number five spot becomes a battle between Miguel Alfredo Gonzalez, whom you just mentioned, Kevin Cialoli, who's a non-roster invitee, and Chad Billingsley, although the feeling in Chad Billingsley is behind schedule, and the Phillies said when they signed him, the best-case scenario, he's ready to join the big league rotation by late April. So at this moment in time, it looks to be Gonzalez and Cialoli competing for that fifth spot, with the Phillies really keeping their fingers crossed that Billingsley continues to move in a straight line and can be ready to join the rotation sometime in April. But certainly the starting pitching depth without Cliff, the starting pitching depth with Cliff Lee healthy was a concern entering camp, and with Cliff Lee not healthy becomes an even greater concern going forward.
Gonzalez is such an intriguing guy because when he first came on the market, he seemed like a little more than just a guy. He seemed like, someone that people were really excited about, someone who could have even made a difference in the season he was signed. There have been these health issues and all kinds of questions. Are they any closer at this point to having a read on what Gonzalez really is as a pitcher in the major leagues?
I don't think so, not yet, but certainly they are hoping that they can get their money's worth. You know, they originally agreed to a $48 million deal with him in August of 2013, and then there were some health issues, health concerns, and he ended up signing for only $12 million, which is a pretty big reduction for a guy. And then his shoulder didn't hold up last year. They ended up moving him to the bullpen because they thought he'd be more effective pitching out of there. And now he's back as a starter heading into camp, and he wants to start. The Phillies want to see him start because they've invested some money into him. But the jury is still out. They really like what they saw with him as a relief pitcher last year, but he still considers himself a starter. So I think they're kind of throwing him that bone, so to speak, this spring, kind of like they did with Chanhol Park in 2009. Chanhol Park came into camp. They pictured him as a reliever, quite frankly, but he's like, I want to come into camp and try to start. So, like, all right, we'll let you start. He ended up getting a job in the rotation, struggled, and they moved him to the bullpen, and he ended up having a great year for the Phillies in 2009. And I could actually kind of see some similarities there. They want to keep Miguel happy. They want to give him an opportunity. It certainly does him no harm if he pitches great as a starting pitcher, but if he struggles in that role, then they can move him into the bullpen. So they're still waiting to see. And quite frankly, it is a huge spring for him. I mean, especially with Cliff Lee's situation, he has got an excellent opportunity now to kind of assert himself as a legitimate big league starter, and he's going to have a chance to prove it.
Where is Chase Utley at right now as he tries to get into Grapefruit League games?
His right ankle, which he sprained in January, is still swollen. I took a look at it last week, and it was visibly swollen, and Ruben Amaro Jr., Phillies GM, said this week that he's probably at least a week away from playing in games. So probably at least a week away from games. Certainly doesn't make it sound like it's anything close to happening. Best case scenario is a week away. But it would not surprise me if it lingered even further. And the longer it goes, the less at-bats he gets, the less ready he might be for opening day. But looking at this Phillies offense, you know, they don't have any other options. So I think they're hoping Chase can get in by mid-March, or, you know, at least get some regular at-bats in spring training. I think he'll be on the opening day roster and in the opening day lineup. But certainly they're hoping it speeds up, because they need this offense. They need as much help as they can get with this offense right now. And not having him in the lineup does them no favors.
Yeah, I mean, I realize it's still pretty early in the spring, but for a guy who has really dealt with a lot of physical issues, and a guy who's not young, at what point does it start becoming maybe a question or a worry about opening day?
Yeah, I think once you get to that mid-March mark, and it really is only a week away. So I think if it starts lingering past, you know, March 15th, 16th, 17th, in that area, then you start going, okay, is this guy going to be able to, you know, if he comes back on March 23rd, for instance, is 8 days, 9 days of spring training games going to be enough for him? You know, they might say yes. You know, in the past, when Chase has missed significant time during the season, he's only played a few games of rehab games, and then, you know, they've activated him. So I'm sure he'll say, you know, hey, as long as I can get a week's worth of at-bats, I can get ready to go. So, but, you know, you'd like to have him as sharp as possible, and you'd like to have him as healthy as possible. So sooner rather than later, for sure.
I guess specifically what I'm wondering about, in with a player like him at his age and with a club that has publicly said, look, the focus is on the long term, and a guy who conceivably could be a trade chip, although I know that everybody's kind of said the right things about that he's happy there and all that, does the equation change, I guess, is what I'm wondering, when, you know, odds are, if you have to do without Chase Utley for 2 weeks in April, it probably doesn't change your chances of playing in the postseason. If you do rush him back and something goes wrong or whatever, it maybe significantly hinders your chances of trading him down the line. Does that sort of situation, that he's a potential tradable guy, that they are a team that is in something of a rebuilding mode, does that change the equation and maybe they're more conservative with him?
Yeah, that's a great point. That does make a lot of sense, because yeah, they're not going into the season saying, all right, you know, we're going to try to reel off 95 wins this year. They are rebuilding, and they do view Chase Utley as a trade piece, even though, like you said, everybody's kind of saying the right things right now. We don't see Chase going anywhere, and Chase saying, I'd like to stay with the Phillies, although Chase kind of did leave the door open last month when he talked about saying, hey, if they start trading some of these guys, maybe my position changes on that. So holding him out till he's healthy might make sense, because if he's healthy and he's productive, then other teams start going, oh boy, I need a second baseman. Look at the numbers Chase Utley's putting up here in the second half. And even long-term thinking, I don't know if the Phillies probably wouldn't acknowledge this, but he has an option that vests, a $15 million option that vests automatically, I believe, based off of 500 plate appearances. So, hey, if he misses several weeks of the season, Chase Utley could become even more valuable, because if he can't hit that mark, a team that is looking to maybe acquire him down the road might say, oh, well, he's not going to hit that option, so we're not going to be locked in for another year of his contract, so maybe that makes him even more attractive. So, yeah, I think all those things will definitely come into play as this spring continues and as they kind of view the progress or lack of progress with his ankle.
All right, well, Todd Zielecki, thanks for taking some time to chat here on MLB.com Extras, and thanks, everybody, for listening.